is everybody's weekend, despite the fact that I gave you a homework and I wouldn't let you submit it? Really sorry. I hope it doesn't, you know, this mistake doesn't propagate it to the second and third homework too. So I will try to remember to turn it into assignment so everybody can submit. But then now I can do a last change of the homework is please do the same for this course. The last question that currently might not be on the homework, but it should be the last question, is please tell me who you collaborated with. And if you didn't, then please say so too. Okay? It's okay. Let's start to continuing my apologizing. Is that I forgot. I mean, this FABC things, they just have way too many things to be said, and I'll keep forgetting of them. And the first thing is, okay, you are right. The first time I ever read an expression, if they are summed over, I should let you know. So it's two generators, they do commutator, they become a linear combination of any of possible of the generators, including themselves. So there is a sum based on the fact that we have a pair. And we have been very sloppy and happily living in our Euclidean life. And the first thing is Vincent point out, these guys are real. And the idea is you can take a Hermitian conjugate, all these things, and then you should be able to recognize it's real. It's an important fact. And then Robin points is about, wait a second, if I go from here to some delta AB with some constant, you don't need to be an adjoint. True. It's even if it's generators, they still form a vector space. Actually, that's what the Lie algebra's official definition. It's a vector space that has a commutator defined, that this thing satisfies Jacobi identity. But of course, if you have a commutator, you of course satisfy the Jacobian identity. And yes, to diagonalize it, you just rotate your vector until they are diagonalized. That's correct. We don't need it. What we need is compact to make it orthonormal so that they are all ones. Non-compact will have minus ones that coming from the signature. And what we need is simple is in case if it's a simple, then it's an E-rep. So adjoint representations would be E-rep if it's simple. Remember, this simple idea of a simple is you kind of divide it into different parts. So that will be what I want to say about the things that I did said either didn't say or didn't say it correctly. And now we'll do my last attempt on this quotient group. Okay? It's not gonna be whole tight in water. I did write a note among like the all sorts of random optional references. But I'll do a final attempt, and if you're not happy, we'll talk about it later. So the final attempt about a quotient group is to assume you are centa. First assumption, you are centa. So you have a ginormous sec of gifts. Second, assume none of these letters from the children actually reach you. The post office all like on fire or something. Mm-hmm. The letters didn't get you. You have no letters to determine who wants what.
Oh no.
Yeah, I know, right? You're like, what would your children want? I know, maybe Robert's letter get you. And you're like, oh, they want dinosaurs. So Santa put all the gift boxes, identical gift boxes. Each of them have a family of dinosaurs. So we have two symmetries. You can switch the dinosaurs in the gift bag. And he can switch all the gift bags because it doesn't matter who is for whom. He has no letters, right? So you have a sack of gift bags. Each gift bags have some dinosaurs. Then you can see that this sack of gifts forms a group for the symmetry I mentioned of all dinosaurs. This is a family, that's a family, and they are all in bags. And then you can see one of this bag of a switching dinosaurs form a normal subgroup. And now you can see, oh, the quotient group is just only looking at the bags and don't care about the details of the dinosaurs in it. Okay, I have a more rigorous version using the Klein form known as the matrix, flipping matrix group on the note. And also, I really want to tell you about classification, but no, we don't have time. It's in Appendix B. The key of the classification is for any Lie group, Lie algebra, for any Lie algebra, you will find an SU2 there, and you know SU2. So, I want to delay all this until the day that we're not here in CG. I'll be with you there the afternoon. I'll be back by 3. I have a flute lesson and stuff. But from 3 onward, we can discuss about the loose ends of the group theory, and mostly I probably wouldn't know the answer. but also other things. So now, so I'm going to close this chapter about the group theory, okay? All we need to remember is SU2 is very important, and we have all the reps. So now, as Robert's music teacher, Miss Janice, would say, so long farewell, our group study is over. We multiply a bit, we commute a bit, and now it's time to apply it. So today, I promise you, we're not going to have the break on time. Bad news. Good news, today we'll get to answer this big question. So clearly, this is the goal before our break. And what we have so far is that we know it's going to be some operators, unitary operators, and this hopefully is some ERUPs. That's what the group theory tells us so far. And I'll use this as a progress board to keep track of where we are. And I'm going to write things on the board I really hope you recognize. Is that for this group of the special relativity, we did something like this. And some of you, well, I hope actually you have seen it, but you might not get to the end yet, in some other terms. Yeah? See, the reason is for you to do this homework before today is that I can write down the Poincaré algebra without everybody staring at me blank. So this is literally the conclusion of a homework one. I didn't write the extra terms because we know all these, so the eta is symmetric, J is anti-symmetric. You probably have already seen in GR that knowing all this symmetry will help you determine a lot of things. So I'm not going to write the extra term. So questions, binary questions. So I don't know. You can either do not for yes, and this is for no. Yes? No? Yeah. So I'm going to ask you a bunch of binary questions, and I want you to see something, some reaction. Okay. So first question. You have studied this group really thoroughly. Is it abelian?
Which one is no? Which one is yes?
Yes? No. Okay. Good. Okay. Non-abelian. Next question. Is it a compact? Is it compact? What's the parameter can be taken? What are these parameter range? Compact? Not compact?
Emus from the reals.
From the reals. Very good. This is from the reals. I don't care about where the mu nu is from. So non-compact. Is it a direct, okay, this one a little harder. Is it a direct product of two groups, two subgroups? So this is more a reminder of some other thing you did. You have studied this thing and that thing, right?
Yeah.
And is it a result? Like, okay, now, what, it might be wrong. All this index might be wrong, but it looks something. So, is it a direct product or not a direct product?
Not direct.
Not direct, because if it's direct, you should just add them. Well, what are the lambdas doing, right? Okay, not a direct product. And last question. Is it a simple? Remember, simple means it doesn't have a non-trivial normal subgroup. And does it have a subgroup?
Maybe J's or something, maybe
P's
or something. Is that possible?
So the normal, remember, normal is the idea says that you are all going to come back to me. Right? Normal's definition is here's a normal, and then it's going to go come back, not to some other random group element. Yeah?
Yes.
We have P. And the P says P and the P. Oh, that's not gonna, it's zero, but zero is always these, the identity. But this one says, no, it will always come back. So, not a simple. And this time is the time we should all say, oh crap, right? It doesn't belong to any of the category that we studied. It's just so complicated. What are we gonna do? It's not simple, not abelian, non-compact, and non-direct product. For every single tools we have in our box, this group says, I'm just so complicated for you. Anyway, well, it turns out, you know, if that's the goal, that it turns out that something can be done with it, and I'll just give you the cliffhanger, and hopefully by the end of the first half, we'll say, okay, hold on, I can do something. All right, very good. First order. Remember, we only care about two orders, first order, second. Okay, zero's order, we also care. Ha, you have identity, but let's start with first order. First order says, if I have generators, then they can be observables. Okay, now tell me, what are observables? So what I'm saying is once you're doing this expansion, these are generators. And then sometimes they are observables. What do you think you can recognize these things as observable? Anything? Momentum. Momentum, just in case you know it's this is complicated, we decide to choose that generator to be P, right? Well, on the other hand, you've seen so many versions of an Noether theorem. An Noether theorem says, wow, you are translating things. I mean, you have a conserved quantity, and that quantity is momentum by Noether theorem. What else? Well, now we're done. What is this blob? Momentum. Good. What about the other one?
What's the angular momentum?
Angular momentum. Which ones? Angular momentum. Which ones do you think more like angular momentum? Which one give you the feel that it's rotating between two axes? Yes. What?
J12,
right. You wouldn't try to rotate with the time just that. That doesn't give you the angular momentum feel. And if you actually check, this thing, if you just work it out, 1, 2, 2, 3, see what they get, you get a 3-1. So you're like, oh, okay. Angular momentum, algebra. And okay, there's only one thing left, so I'm just going to write it out. It's just J0K. What about them? What do they correspond to them? It corresponds to boost. But do we have a observable for boost? Is there something is like, we do this experiment, I measure this thing, then this thing will be a boost that I can use it later. Why not? Why not boost? What's wrong with boost that has been demoted? Like what? It's never promoted. But anyway, boosts. We know that, we don't measure it. So not a observable. Why?
Angular momentum in one frame will be boost in another frame, so we do measure it in some sense.
Well, angular momentum and the boosts are independent, right? You can talk about a boost without talking about angular momentum. I'm just saying that if I'm on the train, not rotating at all compared to the person still, and there is a boost. How come we never, like we studied the angular momentum and the momentum since the first time we talked about physics? How come nobody talk about it with boost? What's your guess? Is it observable?
Isn't it like just a relativistic thing? Like we don't really have boosts in like Newtonian.
Okay, after special relativity, no, people still keep talking about this is the momentum, this is the angular point. They still don't talk about boosts.
Probably is it that in Schrodinger picture, it's how we start to build observables.
Ah, that's a very interesting point. But remember, at some point, we say observable has to be what a kind of operator?
Summation.
Very good. So this is the cliffhanger after tutorial 3. So the CD tutorial, after CD tutorial, we have a specific representation. We can build these boosts, and you can tell me why they are not observables. Last question, what happens to the position operator in quantum mechanics? Well, you have to be, according to this group theory thing, you have to be a generator to start with to become an operator. And position is right here. They are just parameters we expand with. never got the chance to be the matrix. Matrix index all come to the generator. So that's why my next point is that the second order, let's concentrate on this nice thing. I know that algebra is not the easiest to look up, but there is one part that's easy. It says it's zero. What does quantum mechanics tell us? If things commute and we can also choose our base in a nice way. Yeah, because they can be simultaneously diagonalized. That's what it's telling us. So that's why. Well, this is an important point. It says I can say my state is labeled by this momentum, because doing all this simultaneous diagonalizing, that means this thing actually have eigenstate, and they will have eigenstate for four of them. So in a state, I'm not gonna write out the index. So in a state, it's still just p. And then I take a look at that algebra, I was like, I have no idea. So these are some other labels that I couldn't figure out. Okay, I'm not gonna write all this. I'm going to say I'll call it an S, because it's some other labels that I don't know yet. Maybe there isn't, but I need to assume that there are some other labels before take it away. Okay, hence that I'll claim that, okay, there's something I didn't write here. What do you think this something is?
Eigenvalue.
The eigenvalue, which is this thing. Perfect. And the next thing I'm gonna write is that forget about those lambdas I have no idea how to deal with, but I know how to do this. And then this is when the first time we say trans. We say, oh, first I found this thing. This thing has some building block of PS. No idea what S is, but whatever. I don't need this. I know how to do translation. And this is hopefully is not very surprising. the unitary operator corresponding to our transformation looks like a translation. Okay, so we made some progress.
I don't understand why did you from the penultimate line to the last line.
So that's the very good question. My point is that I didn't write the full part. I should have. See, that's a very good question. I was being very sloppy and didn't write the state. This is what I meant. Yeah? More believable. I have P. The only thing I did is exponentiating. And I say, I know how to exponentiate it because they commute. Yeah, we made some progress. It's expected progress. That's what normally known as the translation.
So that one indicates delta or something?
Yes. By one, I might. Third. I should have to write this one. Yep. Okay. So, yeah, we all agree. Translation is not bad. All right, let's go for the Lorentz, right? What about, now we're gonna do something by ignoring the translation. I mean, it's a hard thing, so you can make some cuts and hopefully things get easier. So let's just forget about translation. The only thing, I'm just rotating around the space-time. Well, this I think I claim it's certainly true. Right? Let's just say there is some unitary operator that Wigner tells us corresponding to that transformation. But that's what it is. It's not hoping. But if you think about this, well, you retreat, right? This we have a state space. So what do you think of this? In the most general sense, would it become?
E to the I over 2 omega mu j mu times that?
That's a very good answer, except if we don't know how to do all those commutators. Well, we do, but it's hard. Okay, so forget about what we're doing. If I have a state, then there is a matrix on the state. What do you think of the output, the most general output?
A
linear combination of states, because it's the most general thing, right? With some coefficient, something. Your trick, we add a prime and a sum over the prime. Done. Well, if you're happy with this, we can just take a break, right? But the question is, what are these? What are these coefficients? One thing is nice to ask is, what do you think it's p prime? It's a p, and there is a Lorentz transformation called the lambda acting on it. What do you think the p prime is? Lambda p. Turns out it's not trivial. So if you're curious, you can check the footnote to really prove you. Yes, it's going to be lambda p. But I'll take it. I like guesses. And then I'll just move forward. So now we have this. This is slightly better. Thing, we replace p prime with lambda p, yes. And then we write our coefficient out. Certainly depend on the transformation. P changed probably depends on p. So this, I'm just trying to spell it out what this thing is.
Big Gong, sorry, is there really a footnote on it or no?
There is a footnote on it. Oh yeah. I'm very serious about it. What do you do is you act on p mu, right? If you claim this is eigen, if it's eigenstates, it's always easy to do. You put the operator on, and hopefully this eigenvalue come out. This, because this has some coefficients, and a priori, we don't know why it's not depending on lambda. It's not lambda p, it's a comma.
It's an argument. And
yeah, it's an argument, right. That's right. It's an argument, it has two arguments, it depends on the Lorentz transformation. Also depends on p, because p changed. Which means if you take another p, the coefficient probably is going to be something else. Okay, this is very hard. This is very hard, but nevertheless, we're very happy that we find something. So I'm going to go to my progress board, and it says we need to study this. Okay, that's big progress. And interesting, nobody asked me this question. Okay, tricky question for you. Yeah, do you have the questions about this? There's S prime.
You don't know what S prime is?
We have no idea what's S. so we sum over them. We have absolutely no idea what's S.
What's the coefficients?
Very good. That's what we're gonna do. After we find this coefficient, then we're done. We answer the question.
Okay.
Yeah. So tricky question. Since you didn't ask, I assume you know. Why is the S prime on the left and the S on the right? I mean, they are matrices, right? Huh? Matrix element. Great. So if you turn that thing into the bra over here, yes, S prime has to be in front of S. Okay, very good. Well, you asked me how to do this. I have no idea. But we can do something easy. What do you think it will make our life easy in this thing?
The norm should be like rotation preserves distances or something like that.
You want to choose lambda to be rotations? Is that what you said? Rotations between space-time or space?
The four distance should be invariant.
That's right. That's right. I secretly, of course, ignore the fact that you have seen. You have seen in your other QFT that you should have this. So it shouldn't be four independent. It should be three. But this writing that as a vector will make me very painful. So we'll.
I don't understand. What was the question?
The question is that you have a relativistic mass equation,
yeah,
which means that there is only three independent. That's the same thing you've seen in QFT. For a physical state.
Did you assume that we have four independent pieces?
No, I didn't. I just didn't say anything. Yeah. being very quick, being very tricky. Okay, but back to my question. See, this thing depends on lambda. The dependence on lambda cannot be removed. You are trying to figure out what this thing depends on lambda. If it is removed, then you didn't figure out how it depends on lambda. So this is our transformation. We are supposed to figure out something depend on our transformation. If you claim that you get a state and you do a Lorentz, and there is like, you're like, final state has nothing to do with Lorentz transformation. You're like, what? So that is not something we can handle. What other things can be making it easy? The P turning to lambda P. What's the special case?
Infinitesimal.
Huh?
Looking at the infinitesimal changes, like infinitesimal transformation.
We'll definitely get to there. Infinitesimal transformation always show up. But what do you think it's the easiest?
The identity.
Huh?
Identity
transformation will be definitely easier, but that doesn't help us to study. Yeah, so I'm just trying to say is P has been turned into lambda P. And it's because of that we have this P dependence in this coefficient. Because it changed. So what do you think will be easy?
P is zero.
Constant. P is zero.
For any P, so I'm saying P goes to lambda P, which is in general not equal to P. And this situation is very hard.
You want P to be the eigenvector?
Huh?
You want P to be an eigenvector of lambda?
I want P, yes, that's exactly what I want. I want P to be an eigenvector of the transformation. And that's possible, right? You have a momentum, you do some Lorentz transformation, you stay with the same momentum. And that will help to remove this dependence because the momentum didn't change. If the momentum didn't change, why should my coefficient depend on momentum? That wouldn't necessarily cause a change, but that's not the case. This is a very special case.
So how would this exactly happen? Lambda P equal to P?
Special. By it's like I don't know how to do the general case. But I found this he is special and helped me a little bit by removing the p dependence of the coefficient. It's really like you solve a differential equation. You're like, I don't know how to solve it. And you change some coefficients. It says, oh, now I can factorize on the stuff and then I can solve it. It's really just a trick.
Wait, so the
transistor depends
from saying
yeah.
the identity.
Lambda can be other things, right?
How could that? I guess so, maybe.
How?
If p is.
So for example, I have a vector point in this direction.
This is basically an
and I do some rotations in some other dimensions. Changing this vector. Well, this dimension, too. But like, if you do have vector and you just rotate around this vector, the vector in the middle wouldn't change. We're going to almost do that right now. Okay, and we'll come back to that right now. So this is apparently so special, it deserves all the names being changed. So the reference, it's called the reference momentum because you're going to refer to it. So the reference and the momentum, and it's just completely just new notation because this thing is so special. See, this WK equals K is exactly what I wrote there, except now I write it at the index, and the K is exactly the P. But its idea is that works for any momentum, but for our study purpose, I'll just choose a special momentum and fix it. So this k is not changing anymore. And now, it's very funny, I'm going to write this again with all my shiny new names. And really, there's nothing changed. This is changed. There's nothing changed. And somehow I decided that this line deserved to write it again. Just let me finish this and this. So I write exactly the, I think people cannot see it. I write exactly the same line, except now I use cake. It used to be P, any momentum. I say we're just going to work with reference momentum. We used to have lambda, which is a Lorentz transformation general. Now we're just going to study this W. And W is what keep k back to itself. Yeah.
Special name for this momentum?
Reference momentum. Oh. Yeah, it's called the reference momentum.
Did you already say that?
Yeah.
Okay, sorry.
Reference momentum.
S prime S is only a function of W. I think I should probably know that. But
it's just K didn't change, right? If it depends on K, you're probably going to change things. Yeah. Well, I don't know if you're going to change things, but since that variable didn't change at all, the transformation probably didn't depend on it.
Is K different from a null ring?
Well, a null ring would be massless. So K is a momentum that satisfies this. And you have chosen it to be special. It's a momentum, you say, oh, this K is very important. And then you don't change it until you need to. So K is any momentum. It's any form momentum can be picked to be k. But once we picked, it's there. It's not going to change, even if you put some special rotations on it. Yep.
W depends on k, right? Yeah,
no, W is a Lorentz transformation, hence does not depend on it.
Suppose I choose a k, then W must be such that k does not change.
That's right. Oh, you meant the W secretly depend on K? I don't think so. But we'll get there. I don't think so. But yeah, that's a good question. So that's it.
We're like K secretly depends on W.
What?
Once you fix a K, you also fix a W.
Right. If you fix K, you're gonna fix what the W you handle. That's right. That's right. Yeah. The next step doesn't depend on this K anymore. Yes. At this point, of course, if you choose a K, then different rotations you have to choose to keep K in place.
What is the difference between when you say if K is fixed, W is fixed, and the thing that Vatsalya said, if K is fixed, W is a function of K? Because
it's weird, right? But because W is a bunch of numbers.
Yeah, because the fixed are just a bunch of numbers, and if you say W depends on.
When I say W depend, I shouldn't say, I don't think I should say W is a function of K, but then it's more like, you give me K, I'll find you a W. I do all the W that you need. Okay. So I have one line and we'll come back to this W and K, okay? Now I make a claim, is that these things, precisely these things, well, you see, I write a letter D, right? It furnish a rep of little group. Right, sorry, little group is all this W are the little group. As you can see, if you have W acting on K is K, you add another W, not going to change. It's a symmetry. So these W things are very symmetries you can do. And of course, you have identity, you can inverse it. W is very nice. W is a group.
What do you mean by furnish? Like what?
It's, I don't know, fancy math work. Is. But if you read the math book, they say that. It has nothing to do with furniture. But yes, so they say these things. So first of all, W is a group because W doesn't change K. It's a symmetry, and you can check all the axioms. They all work. All the conditions, they all work. And then the other thing you can check is this is a rep of the little group, which means I invite you to check, and I believe it's on the footnote, that by saying it's a rep, I meant this, right? And this is precisely what a rep meant. You use the rep multiplication, which is matrix, the multiplication are the same.
These are the doubles. W is the little group?
W's are the little group.
Okay. Cool.
I guess it's smaller. I have no idea why they are calling it a little group. Kind of cute. Okay, you're like, oh, we're in business. Group theory finally helped. We have a rep. Okay, so now, non-canonically. Now I invite you to consider a massive state. Okay? I hope you have done this before. My claim is, if it's a massive state, then there is one choice of ref momentum. As it is even more equal than all the other moment. Rest frame. That's exactly what I'm looking for. Rest. Right? It's a ref momentum. I can choose whatever I want. I mean, I would prefer to choose an easy one instead of having just random one trying to say, what's all these matrices make you an eigenvector? Okay, perfect. Now my question is, what is the little group then? What is little group up, W in this case?
Is 3D
it just rotation. 3D rotation. And you're like, what? Right? So, what's our next step? What did we do in the first tutorial?
SU2.
It's SU2. And you're like, problem solved. I found all the rep already. Like, now as a mathematician, I should be like, ha, QED, I win. So this, we can now go to a progress port. It says, if we choose K and a W nicely, wait, the W is not chosen, but choose K nicely, then the story W become a SO3 and an SU2 and done. Check mark. Well done. Well, of course, you're like, how precisely am I going to find this D in terms of all the matrix element? I didn't find that writing that down very enlightening, but of course it's in the lecture. Might be also a footnote because I was not enlightened by it. It literally says, I have G1, G2, G3. I found the matrix element already. And then I add them together with linear coefficient. Done. But see, wow, we solved the problem. And so what do you think? Okay. Well, then here is the question. Special relativity comes in. Says, but what about when they are not equal? Right? Okay, I'm gonna use a new board because I need the whole board. Well, we solve it. We identify an easy problem and then we solve it. Then the special relativity come. What's the, what about this case? Here is a very interesting discovery. Is the one you have a ref momentum. You can always reach to any momentum by a Lorentz transformation.
Is that K new?
Nope. Thank you. Yeah? You might not, like, it's same believable when there is a footnote to show you what exactly it looks like. Also, not very enlightening. So just trust me, give me a nice momentum, I can boost and rotate and get all possible momentum this particle can ever get. And this is often shorthanded by dropping all the index like that. Okay. So now we say we understand all the states labeled by K because we found all the rep. We're going to define other states. Says this state is nothing but using this L. See, this is the operator of L acting on the state, and the transformation turned the K into the P. So this state will be from a K state turned into a P state. So this is a good definition. And there is a normalization factor. The normalization factor will come in later. Okay. Now, it's the first time I'm going to do a calculation for you that is more than 3 lines, which I hold dear what David told me. But I'm just saying that's how important it is. So let's go. the calculation itself is not complicated. I say this, I say normalization factors, I can fix later. So I throw out the normalization factor. And the next thing I do is copy what I need so I can do it. So nothing happened. I throw some normalization away.
Could you please repeat the rationale behind the first line?
The first line?
Yeah.
This is, it's a definition. So definition normally doesn't have much rationale. But I'm just saying K has turned into a P because of this. Then at least I'm authorized to call the end state a P state.
So there is nothing special about that, what you wrote there? I mean,
no, it's a definition. Even write define. I made a definition. Says, but the idea is that if K and KS is the base vector of my rep, then the point is that the P, this is not independent of KX because they are related by this boost.
But aren't you going to use U K is equal to K itself or whatever? Are you going to use that?
No.
No, okay.
Well, maybe later. So I'm just saying that I can do this definition, and you must do this definition to some extent because K turns into P. And it's by a known transformation. So they are not independent. And it's likely to be dependent in this way because this says this is the operator corresponding to the transformation. This is what the Wegener tells us. There's a transformation turned K to P. There got to be a unitary operator turn the state. And just be cautious with throwing some normalization factors, which is in general there. So what's the next step? I have one U and another U. Unitary operator, which are corresponding some symmetry. Yeah? What do you want to do?
Do you want to change the places of people?
No, I don't. No, because they are not a commute. Look, all these things tells us those two things are very unlikely to be commute.
Yeah.
Use group theory. Group theory.
That's
what the group theory tells us, right? If it's related to group theory, then I can do the multiplication first. Okay, now there is a trick. There's the motivation is this trick works. So there is really, I don't know how to explain the motivation of this trick. Purely on the fact that they work. It worked. And this is a, yes, crazy step. Is that just like we don't have enough things to write. I didn't do anything fancy. I just inserted an identity. It's UL, UL inverse, and that's the same thing. Right? Okay. Here is the fine part. You know, this is identity. I need to draw another circle. And they were like, wait, I have done this before, so I can do it again. Nothing stops you to combine those U's. Yeah, group theory comes back, says, yes, that's totally fine. All right, here is the key point of this derivation. After group theory, more group theory, more group theory because identity with inverse is still group theory. And we arrived at this. I invite you to look at this operator carefully and look at the transformation carefully. And it says, we start with K, and then it sees an L, sees an lambda, and it sees this thing. What happens? I'll give you 2 minutes, because this is the key of all these things. What will happen to K if I start at a K? I can write it a little better. We start with a K, and there's some lambda P. We turn it into something. And then there's a lambda. We turn it into something. And then it says this. Right? I'm just writing this element in some more human language.
Does it stay the same?
You just want to say it's P, it's but P. I have some objections after that.
Why is there a dot? Big Gong, why is there a dot over the K?
No.
Oh.
My chalk slide. So, okay, let's do step one. K get a boost by this LP. What does K become?
P.
Perfect. P gets this lambda. What did it become?
Lambda P.
Lambda P. Okay, now lambda P sees this. It's like the thing boosts K to lambda P, but it's the inverse.
It's K.
Back to K. Somehow, this thing pop out that we can identify as W. And then guess what I'm going to tell you? Oh, we solved the W, right? So there's not much to be done. The next thing is as W. If it's W, I know how to do. It turns into this little group, which secretly we know how to do because it's SU2. But once it turns into a rep, those are just a bunch of numbers. So now is the time we make the switch. Because this can go all the way to the end. And together we have all this rep thing. I'm just going to copy it all down. But the end is this. Acting on K. Okay, so the first idea is I say, ha, W. W turns into its rep. And then I say, the rep is just a bunch of numbers. I'm going to pull it ahead. Well, it just has all the indices because that's just a bunch of numbers. And then this guy gets to acting on this.
Is that because
what did you replace?
Huh?
What is the order of T and U?
Is it switched because these are numbers?
They are numbers, but you have two numbers.
They are numbers. Like if you do A, I, J, A, J, K, because A, I, K, I can do whatever I want because I write out all of my index.
Okay, so the middle step was that you expanded the...
In terms of the rep. That we know how to do because it's SU2. I'm not going to do it for you because it looks very complicated, but we know how to do. These are just numbers. And then you're like, what is this? Look at the definition. You have a L acting on a state. It's defined to some other state.
It's just lambda P.
It's lambda P. So this turns into lambda P and here. So now, okay. let me get back to your normalization factors. You use this definition, forward ones, backward ones, so you get something like that. And you're like, oh, I wish this normalization factor just disappeared. How could I make this disappear? And now Dan comes in and says, if you choose my normalization, they will disappear. That's, of course, in the footnote. Yeah, so that's why Dan claims all choices of normalizations are equal, but this normalization is clearly more superior. Otherwise, the rest of the class which is going to carry this thing all the way. It's really bad. Okay, so here, as I said, it's going to be a little break, but we got here. We solved the problem. So the last one says, if you are generally P, that's okay. We got it, because P is LK, this solved, and you can get something PS. Turns into, oh, actually, so then I'm just going to record what we get is this thing that is going to be some sum, some group representation, but then it will be that. Right? I copied everything. These are just like the representation. So basically, we solve that problem. If you normalization correctly, you know exactly what they are. All right, let's take a break. PSU2, we should have seen what? We did our rep. And they are labeled by what other letters they are, but we know they are spin. It has been spin. All this other label, I know what they are. They are spin. So that's how Wegener came to the conclusion that he can label a particle, one particle state, by momentum and the spin. And
how do you know for sure this is spin?
Because it's SU2 rep. And the
is it just because like normally we associate SU2 with like the Pauli matrices and therefore spin, and so since the little group is represented by
It's the same. It's even the same as SU2. It's the space rotation. It's not like random internal degrees of freedoms that people talk about, right? Okay, so if you have been looking at the interview questions, this is my story of SU2. It's quite long. It's 3.5 lectures. Wow. But I have this ghost from the start and try to make sure they all fix together. And you shall do the same for the interview. Give me it.
Was it the past 3.5 lectures? Or
yeah. Past 3.5 lectures that we have learned various aspects of SU2. And so I guess I talked to some of you, and there is the entertainment about my song about SU2. Which Robert named SU2, but the singing is not my strong suit. It's not even my weak suit. It's not even a suit for me. But I'll try my best. But you might not have heard of Pink Floyd and the Gnome song, so it might not make sense. But I'll try my best. Okay. I want to tell you a story about a little group. If I can, a group named SU2 and other groups around the globe, raising, lowering, biding their time. She had an eldra, an adjoint rep. It looked quite good. She had a big adventure by net reps of all size, structure constant use for all. And then one day, hooray, another way for groups to say hooray. Look at the quarks, look at the leptons, isn't it good? Winding, finding place to go. And then one day, hooray, another way for groups to say hooray. So, they're out of order. I'll find it out. So basically now we answered, quantum mechanics answered special relativity's big question. Quantum mechanics says, I need that one. This is very out of order. No, here. Quantum mechanics says, wow, now I found a new puzzle piece. And this puzzle piece is called S matrix. Because quantum mechanics says, wow, I have a definition of a one particle state. I mean, if everything is free, what stops me from defining two particle states, three particle states, many particle states, right? Mm-hmm. And so how do we do scattering matrix? The goal for us today is to figure out what's this. I have to explain what this thing is, but this is our goal. So alpha stands to some multiple particle labelings like P1, S1, P2, S2, P3, S3, P4. And beta is the same. It's just a bunch of labeling condensed into one letter. Hey, you're like, what is in and out? In? Well, first there's free. And in is something that if observed in negative infinity, which is when the interaction hasn't happened, it will look like the free particles. Such state probably exist, yeah? And of course, the out is if you look from the plus infinity when the interaction already happened. And then Weinberg says, we are in Heisenberg picture. We have two state, does not depend on time. Precisely why we are in Heisenberg picture, because we remember, the point is we're still in special relativity thing. Time dependence does not help us. And he says, well, you're calculating a scattering matrix. But that's nothing but a amplitude. I know how to calculate amplitude. I have one state, one I have two state. We take the inner product. That's the scattering amplitude. We're like, this doesn't look like the one that Dan showed me. The goal of this part is to show why this is the same. Okay? I know you have seen that one. But I think Dan says something. I just asked Dan yesterday. He says, oh, we have this creation of an initial operator. And then they in different pictures. Like, oh, yeah, we have no creation of a Lagrange operator. We spend all this time, we find our one particle state, and that's it. So here is Weinberg's argument, is that, okay, first we need to, I'm just going to write it here. Okay, because we're going to use it. Yeah, that's actually our first conclusion. That's the translation we know. Turns out it's useful. So that what Weinberg says is that, very good. I like all this definition. If somebody is looking at an infinite path, then the in state should look like a free particle state. But Who is looking at it? Of course, it would be Alice and Bob. One time we used Dan and Robert. But says she has a clock. As t equals 0, they interact. And Bob has a different clock. The clock says you shouldn't be surprised that what I'm trying to show is this, right? After all, I'm doing quantum field theory too. It should work. For the next three lectures, you will see me doing a lot of like this. You're like, hey, I've seen this before. That's right, because we're trying to learn quantum field theory from this different point of view. We're not doing a different complete theory. So, very good. See, that's a very possible setup. They each have a clock. Their clock is a shift to each other. Okay. Now,
prime not or whatever?
T prime?
T prime not. Okay, that's the start of the.
I'm just saying that at minus tau, it's going to interact. Zero. Okay. Now, of course, I'm going to apply that. This is what we figure out how to do. Is this? Except I'm choosing a translation that has only the translation is 0, 0, 0 minus tau. That's the time translation I want to do. I'll let you see. Why? Because why later? So you will see this, and then you will say, if I have a free state, then it'll be translated with a free Hamiltonian.
Is that alpha? Like
that's a general statement. Has nothing to do. Alpha is some random things.
Okay.
I'm going. That's exactly what I'm doing now. Is that? That's a general statement. That is the big question we answered. Now I'm just going to apply it to two different kinds of states, and one of them is free, and one is asymptotic free. But no, not that. Not the same meaning, but the asymptotic states, right? Two applications. Free theory use free Hamiltonian. Not a free theory use not free Hamiltonian.
These alpha states in Alice's reference frame or Bob's or whatever.
Okay, Alice and Bob. And then I'll make one more line says that I'm considering. I don't know how to do non-predictive things, and those are very cutting edge research. I learned how to do perturbation theory. Says I can satisfy the Hamiltonian with a free Hamiltonian some interaction. That's what I sort of know. So you say Alice, if Alice has a state because of this clock minus tau, where that minus tau is from, because of this translation, Bob will say the state differently. Now we are just going to take a very interesting limit. Why is this interesting? It's interesting because when tau goes to minus infinity, t prime equals minus tau goes to plus infinity, if the interaction happens at infinite future, then at any point the Bob should observe at the infinite past to that interaction. Right? We push the interaction all the way to infinite future. Now it doesn't matter when he's observing. It's all going to be infinite past. So what I'm claiming is this Bob state that in the infinite past, also Bob state, there should be a gray. See, this is the in state, which is asymptotically negative infinity, and this is the free state. And that's the definition of asymptotic state, is if there exists an observer, which is Bob, observing at the infinite past, always true, because we push the interaction to the future, then these two should be the same. That's the definition. Then we can write this. Then you'll be like, whoa, hopefully. Maybe now it's not the whoa point. We need the other side. The other side. So I'm going to define this thing because it's ridiculously hard to write all the time. Yeah? And see if you agree. The matrix element I claim is going to be, go turn into free states, and you're going to get a omega dagger at plus infinity from the out state, and the omega minus infinity from the in state. And this thing, we shall call it S. And if you look at S carefully, what's U dagger U? That would be your time evolution operator that the thing shows. Okay, I'm not going to tell you how to compute this because you have done this thing twice in quantum theory, once in the first half, once in the second half. So, but there is, of course, an exciting notebook if you want to do it again. But I'm going to try to write the results for you. And this stands for time ordering that you are very familiar with. And this is known as the Dyson formula.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Is it supposed to be tau?
No. It should always be in tau. What
is right.
Yeah.
No, left hand side.
Oh, yes, of course. No, T has never come to into play.
Can you just one more time explain what do you mean by in and out?
So in state is a state if you observe at the infinite past. It will look like free state. Out state is if you observe in the infinite future, you will see you will see the free state. So we're basically trying to relate them to free states because free states is what we know how to do things. Okay. So then, okay. We could stop here, but then it would be fun to get another puzzle piece. So I'm asking for 5 minutes so we can get another puzzle piece, okay? The other puzzle piece is when quantum mechanics is trying to work this all by herself, special relativity pick in says, oh, I have more requirements. The puzzle is, okay, I'm gonna leave it empty because this is more fun. So is that fine? That this, you've seen it twice.
Yeah, it doesn't matter, it's a dummy variable, but d tau v tau.
It's a dummy, so I'm gonna keep it. Yeah. Okay, so, but the first, but your question that is very good to lead our puzzle piece is that you see dt. special relativity frowns. I don't like DT. What do you think of the special relativity wants to see?
D4x.
And so special relativity says, well, I hope this thing is going to be a space integral of some density so that if this is a scalar, the thing, the first term, has satisfied a special relativity constraint, right? So it's kind of one way of saying why you combine special relativity and quantum mechanics, and how does locality creep in. So there's where it creeps. This thing is very dangerous. I like the combine of the four. Okay, so what other special relativity would ask? I'll give you a hint. This is a hard question. It is because of this. Time ordering special relativity also from. Are you sure this happens at the same time? Or not? You can't really tell, right? That's what special relativity tells you. So what would be nice? So it Do you think it's the time-like is the problem or space-like is the
problem? Space-like, because you can agree on the same time when the distance is greater than zero.
Exactly. Space-like, you can agree on the same time, then there's no time ordering. Space-like. Okay, so what needs to happen for...
Interesting.
Hi. Who has the more superior normalization. But anyway, let's continue bring our attention. So you want to sort of considering, this is very bad, but this is sort of a 4D thing, right? You kind of have this, but when it's a space like you are saying, it's time ordered. What would be nice?
Dirac delta.
Yeah, Dirac delta. That will be certainly nice, but let's go more general. So the all thing about Weinberg says, I don't want to assume any theory, but yet I want to do computations. So let's see how far he can push, right? So this needs to be time ordered. If it doesn't agree, right? What does time ordering mean to you? It's this, phi x, phi y, and it goes to phi x, phi y, nothing goes wrong. But in other case, you get what? I'm not telling you. Phi x, phi y, when you do time ordering, what? So what would be nice? What it would be nice. That's very right.
You only have
this commutator
left.
Aha! Uh-huh. And it would be extremely nice if we have some commutator left. Yeah. Special relativities. Wouldn't that be beautiful? If the commutator vanished, then I can do all the swapping I want about this time order. And this is what Noam to you guys more as a causality condition. So, yeah, that's, I'm done. So, yeah.
If you haven't registered for the Day of Discovery, please do so now, on Thursday.
Sorry. I don't know what you're going to discover. If you are going to discover why we need a field, then it's related.